You're listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Hi, and welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. I am Andrew Berkshire, and I'm here with my co-host, Mary Clark. Make sure you follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitter, at Andrew Berkshire, at Mary C. Clark, and at the Crosscheck NHL. This podcast is brought to you by StatHero.com. StatHero, the first ever daily fantasy sports book, gives the player the advantage. Go to StatHero.com/LockedOn for 300% back on your first play. That's huge. We got a really great show for you today. We're going to talk about all the playoff series that are left. The Canadians obviously have wrapped up their series against the Winnipeg Jets. And the Lightning have moved on as well. But we got the Bruins and the Islanders going to Game 6, as well as the Avalanche and the Vegas Golden Knights going to Game 6 as well. So we're going to talk about that. And also we have Eric Engels from Sportsnet, the Montreal Canadiens insider, to talk to us later in the podcast about what has changed for this Canadiens team and why they're having so much success and why they look better than they have since the start of the season. So, Mary, how you doing?
Good. I'm really sad I had to miss that interview because I was visiting family that is in right now from San Diego. So I'm trying to, you know, enjoy the opportunities I can with them while they're in town. So I had to miss that interview, but I heard it went well, but I'm doing good. I mean, like I said, visiting family, watching some hockey, have a few days off from work, trying to enjoy the nice weather, but there's been like thunderstorms the past couple of days. So that's been nice to watch them, but like I haven't been able to get outside like I've wanted to, but hey, we're basically in summertime. Thunderstorms are a thing, and I do love watching a good thunderstorm.
Yeah, thunderstorms are amazing. We had one a couple days ago here, and Dylan was just very enthused by the fact that you could count after you see the lightning strike and yep. See how far the thunder is away and whether it's moving closer to you. And he's convinced that the lightning comes from Thor.
So oh, nice. Like, okay.
Thor's fighting Loki, Dad. Thor's fighting Loki.
Oh, yeah.
So that's always fun. But yeah, so to hockey, obviously the Canadians wrapped up their series against the Jets. We did a podcast that came out after that, but we talked about it before. So just to touch on it, they played a perfect game. Even without Jeff Petrie, the Jets were demoralized.
Yeah.
They just weren't there. And Connor Hellebuyck, if it wasn't for him, that game probably ends 8-2 because Carey Price just spotted Logan Stanley, two of the weakest goals that he's let in this entire postseason. But, you know, all credit to Logan Stanley. He was one of the Jets that didn't give up.
Yeah. I mean, like we did a deeper dive in our previous podcast, which I guess was a little out of date in terms of like we didn't know the score of the final game. But
yeah,
we kind of assumed at that point it was going to be very difficult for the Jets to come back.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm surprised. I mean, I got all my feelings out about the Montreal Canadiens on that podcast because I'm still I should be happy. But I think I came to the realization that at the beginning of the season, I was high on them and then they were bad. So then I switched my tune and was like, no, they're a bad team. And now they're good again. So I'm like, they've made me look dumb.
To switch back.
Well, they've just made me look dumb multiple times. So I'm like, okay, it's like the Oprah, what is the truth? What
no
is the
one
truth
knows
here?
That feeling about the Montreal Canadiens more than I do.
That's fair. But, I mean, good for them. They played, like you said, they played a perfect game. Carey Price, I mean, led in those goals. But the dude's been the reason why they've been here. I mean, he's been backstopping them to success for a reason. And I'm looking forward to, because I think that they'll play, the winner of the Avalanche Golden Knights, right?
Yes.
I don't want to say that's going to be a slaughter because we've talked about this and the Canadiens have, you know, bucked the trend every time, but that will be, I'm interested to see how when we finally get out of the interdivision play and we finally get.
Is the North actually trash?
Yes.
We'll find out.
I mean, I'm assuming we'll do a preview heading into the third round of the playoffs, but that intrigues me a lot because I think that the Avalanche and the Golden Knights and also the Lightning are the best teams in these playoffs and Montreal having to go up against probably the second best team in these playoffs is going to be a test for them. But if Carey Price continues to be Carey Price and they continue to shut down teams defensively the way they have, this guy can be the limit for them. At this point, I'm not going to be surprised because they've surprised this entire playoff round.
Yeah, that's the thing. And Eric and I got into that late in the interview that we recorded this morning. And he talked about how the Canadians are playing such a team game that it's hard to be surprised at them anymore. But he, like, even though everyone is still going to write them off going into this next round, whether it's Colorado or Vegas, you know, it's not going to be an easy out because they're so united. And I think that, I think we touched on it in the last podcast, that belief that you can win that the Canadians seem to have, it just, it matters. And you can see it.
And they
the
way didn't, that
they played the Jets was just brutal.
And they didn't, they led in that game too, right? Like they scored the first goal, I believe, right?
Yeah, they haven't trailed since like, I think they're over 400 minutes. They're 50 minutes away from the NHL record for the longest period of time in NHL history without trailing in the playoffs. And that record is owned by the Montreal Canadiens in 1960.
Huh.
Who I think swept the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Stanley Cup final to win that year. But either way, Vegas and Colorado is obviously the next place to go. Colorado looked much closer to the team that we expect in in the game that in game five. They just, man, I felt so bad for them because the first period they were incredible.
Yeah.
And the second period they were still good. And then the third period, Vegas,
it just fell apart.
We got these guys.
Yeah, and it fell apart in 5 minutes. And sometimes that's all it takes is just a few defensive miscues, a bad goal here and there, a team just, you know, getting it on you. And I mean, it just evaporated so quickly for the Avalanche. And
You expected that after the third period that maybe they would compose themselves heading into overtime. Mm-hmm. And it's like, actually, no, Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty exist.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, that was a 52nd. Like, I was like, oh boy, are we gearing up for a long overtime? But no, it lasted 50 seconds.
Triple overtime.
Yeah. I mean, just the way these teams are. And, you know, I mean, part of me was like, it's fast paced hockey. Like, I don't think we'll go that long without seeing a goal. And we didn't, but I wanted to. But yeah, the defensive misplay on that. I mean, like, I don't remember who it was that took the shots from the point. On that play that led Mark Stone to that goal, but like they took a couple shots and then a couple blocks later comes back up off one of the players, and you know the Golden Knights get a rush and score, and just it's over like that. And it's kind of demoralizing for the Avalanche, who played a much better game, and I don't really know the like full advanced metrics, but probably deserved to win on the, you know, the money puck deserve a win meter that swings back and forth. They probably were up on that one, if I had to guess, considering the way they played.
Yeah, I didn't check because I wasn't on social media for that game. I was like in bed watching it on my computer because it's just like I can't do like the immersive social media and watching a game after.
These games are on too late. These games are on too late. I mean, not to say that I'm old, but I kind of am at this point. It's too much for a working person like me and you. Like,
we're
with
East Coast folks.
Yeah, this is tough. I'm very excited for when, you know, the time shift towards like 8, just like 8 p.m.
Yeah,
which is better.
And as much as I am excited for that, and like the fact is these are the last two Western Conference teams left. And I think that says a lot about the Eastern Conference, to be fair. They're just a better conference right now, but I am gonna miss this series when it ends, and I really hope it goes seven, because it's just been such incredible hockey from end to end. Like, even the games that Vegas was dominating and Colorado kind of looked silly, like, to see the, not so much a chess match, but the tactical changes that each team is making and the high level of play that these teams are capable of, it really is incredible.
Yeah, this is the Western Conference final we deserved in a regular, in like a regular playoff format. But I'll take what we can get at this point.
Taken from us by the stupid Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I'll take what we can get, though, because this is still an incredible series, and it would have still been best of seven regardless. I mean, I know that, you know, a chance to win like one series away from a Stanley Cup, you know, changes things a little bit, but, you know, I'll take it because this has been so fun. I really would like it to go seven. I really hope, you know, the Avalanche continue to come back to form and aren't too demoralized from that loss, because that was a tough loss for sure.
Yeah, it was. So the Lightning move on. They beat the Hurricanes, and Andrei Vasilevskiy posts a shutout. The Canes Twitter account halfway through the game posted, "This account is very tired of Andrei Vasilevskiy."
I think
their Twitter
account's
been the best of the playoffs.
Yeah, they're great
in terms of like team accounts. They're really. I love when they were twisting the knife on the Predators.
Oh yeah,
Photoshop that the Predators blocked them, and the Predators were like, "No, we didn't." Like, shh, you don't talk.
Yeah, it was really good.
Go away. But yeah, this series, I wanted more from this series. The Lightning are just too good.
Facets. It is kind of disappointing that the Hurricanes weren't able to, you know, step up to the plate and really deliver here. I could definitely see it being a disappointing outing for the Hurricanes, because I know expectations were high. They did win the what division they were in, the Central, right?
Yeah, they were.
No, they were the top seed. And it was okay. It wasn't Florida though. So yeah. Okay, that's right. So I can see it being a disappointing outing this playoffs for them, and I think some things are gonna have to take a good look, I think, at some aspects of their team. I mean, we talked about goaltending last time. I mean, I don't think that was a huge factor here because it was still a 2-0 game. It was pretty close. I mean, the opening goal was scored on the power play. There's not much you can do against the Tampa Bay power play. It's so hard to stop them. But I think I've said it before, but like, this Tampa Bay team is just a tier above everybody else right now. And
yeah,
I think the Hurricanes will run it back, but I do think that there are still holes this team can, you know, plug and give themselves maybe a better shot
at goaltending.
Yeah.
Not that Nedeljkovic was the issue in game 5.
No,
he was
actually
quite great.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It just, I think it's hard because you're not going to get a goaltender of the caliber Vasilevsky is, but I think you need to at least raise your floor just a little bit more to give you more of a chance, because he can be beaten. He doesn't look human all the time, but he can be beaten. He has had bad games and bad goals. I mean, what was game 4, right? When like the multiple goal bonanza in the second period, like that, a lot of those, like there were some of those shots that could have been saved from him. So you can beat him. It's just, it's hard because Tampa Bay is just so far well and above everybody else in these playoffs, and it is clear to see, plain as day, in these playoffs.
Yeah, and well, we talk about Colorado being demoralized from game 5. I think that second period when you score 4 goals against Andrei Vasilevsky, mm-hmm. and you lose the game, that is demoralizing.
Yeah.
You just, whether it's the goaltending or the defense just not holding against Tampa Bay's attack, to lose that game in dramatic fashion like that, I don't know how you come back from that mentally in the same year. And maybe the Hurricanes will be, you know, so much stronger mentally next year. But I know, like, I was reading Sebastian Aho's comments through Sarah Sivian on Twitter, and man, he just sounds demoralized and beaten down.
I mean,
I feel bad because he's just a kid still.
Yeah, you know? And like, it's so hard because this Hurricanes team did so well in the regular season, and you know, they've proved themselves to be a very, like, one of the top teams in the NHL just by the way they've played. But
yeah,
you run into the juggernaut that is the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you aren't going to survive. I cannot see, at this field of teams we have left, really many teams matching up to them in just the way, like, that they're so well constructed. Like, they're just from top to bottom, all lines. They just know how to get you every single time. And when they can't, they have a goaltender that can, you know, keep them in very, very close games.
Yeah.
So I know that, like, you know, I might be cursing the Lightning here because I have a habit of doing that, talking up a team and then bad things happen to them. So I'm sorry, Tampa Bay, if something happens. But that's just the vibe I get from this. Like, I think that you're overall positive if you're the Hurricanes after this, but there are definitely some things you can come back stronger with next year. And yes, hopefully have a longer run.
Well, and I think Carolina can easily say, like, we had the toughest division to get out of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to go through the Lightning, who have, like, a $200 million cap.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is a tough thing to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. And especially now that they're all healthy, too.
Like, yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And you can't take that away from them, really, that it was a tough road. They couldn't make it this year, but maybe next year they do. And Tampa Bay is probably not going to be as strong. They've got salary cap issues they have to deal with. So there's an opening for them.
Yeah.
I did, my troll self was very controlled to not retweet Sarah Sivian's tweets about Sebastian Aho just being devastated and being like, I bet you he wishes that offer sheet wasn't matched now.
Oh boy.
Could have been in the conference final.
Yeah.
Oof. But yeah, I said that to the group chat for Locked On, and Locked On Hurricanes host Jared Ellis was not pleased with it.
Oh yeah, so I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you didn't go full troll. It's okay, you can say it here because
be funny in private company. Funny, mm-hmm. And he was like, "No, he was never gonna leave."
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "I'm just kidding," but mm-hmm. Yeah, he was not it's pleased. Funny. But yeah, check out Locked On Hurricanes and Locked On Lightning. The Bruins are now behind in their series. The Islanders have won 2 straight here, and Bruce Cassidy is upset
mm-hmm.
with the officiating in this series and the way that the Islanders conduct themselves, and he said that they're not the New York Saints, they're the New York Islanders. And, yeah, it was pretty funny. They mentioned it to Barry Trotz in his coaches conference, and he was like, we're one of the least penalized teams in the league for a reason.
Yeah, it. I thought that comment was hilarious. I wrote about it on For the Win a few nights ago when that happened, because I thought it was really funny, because you don't really see, like coaching beef like that. Like, usually don't, because hockey coaches
like
aren't.
DeBoer and Gallant was the last time.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I don't think Barry Trotz is going to play. That doesn't seem like his type of thing to, you know, play ball with Bruce Cassidy on this type of stuff. So his response was quite funny in its own. But, like, yeah, I mean, did the Bruins get jobbed on a few calls, I think, in that game
Who
five?
Hasn't been
yes.
This
yes. Playoff, but, but I looked at the numbers, and overall, like, I mean, the Islanders were, I think, the second least penalized team this year, and the Bruins were the fourth worst penalized team.
So this is a natural occurrence, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, I get it. I know that, like, people take issue with the Islander style of hockey, and whether or not their style of hockey means they get away more with those, like, subtle calls that will go away in the playoffs. So I know that there's a bigger conversation to be had here, and I get that his frustration is apparent, but there are other ways the Bruins could have won this game. It wasn't all just on the penalties and the power plays and stuff like that. But I get the frustration. It's just really funny to me that we finally get some, like, coaching beef, because this doesn't happen. So I'm trying to not, like, you know, say that he shouldn't say this type of stuff, because, like, I want more of it. I think the NHL will do better if, you know, we have one of the head coaches in the NHL calling one of the major teams the New York Saints instead of the New York Islanders. And I think I saw, like, the New Orleans Saints like responded to something related to the Islanders, and I thought that was really funny. So, like, more of this, please. Keep going with this. I love this. So
yeah, I mean, my first thought when he called them the New York Saints was the New Orleans Saints, and I was like, you mean they're not taking a hit out on people? Like, because there was that whole scandal with the Saints, right? It was they were, like, putting money on the board to injure players.
Yeah, I think that was some time ago. But and then there was also the thing of, like, the New Orleans Saints also do, funnily enough, they have gotten jobbed in previous playoffs with calls not going their way. So I just thought it was an interesting parallel in that regard.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I mean, I just, for me, this series really isn't won or lost on the power play. And the Bruins did also almost come back in that game,
yeah,
too.
They got
it
close.
Was the score of, like, what, 5-4, I think? The Islanders almost lost that lead. So it was very, very close. I mean, I'm not shocked here at what the Islanders are doing. This is what this Islanders team is made for. It's made to, like, choke teams to death.
Yeah, frustrate.
And, yeah, frustrate them, get away with those little calls. This has been their bread and butter for years. So, like, I get the frustration with that, but this is kind of how it's been. And in the playoffs, we know that this is how games are called. They're going to let them play more, whether you agree with that or not. I get it. But yeah, I guess I'm just not surprised here. I was interesting that they did pull Tuukka Rask in the third period. I thought that
they mentioned that he was not 100%. So I'm guessing that it's a very minor thing.
Yeah.
And maybe he was feeling sick or something, and they pulled him out. They said they expect him to be 100% for the next game. So, like, I'm trying to think of what
I hope it's. I hope it's more that and not, you know, because every year in the playoffs, it's always Tuukka Rask versus the world. It seems, at least Tuukka Rask versus Boston.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Well, I tweeted that earlier when they lost. I think their first game that they lost in this series, I tweeted out that, like, it's very funny every single playoffs where, like, things are going really well for the Bruins, and the first sign of any hardship, it's like every Southie in Boston is like, you know what, screw Tuukka.
Yeah.
I hate Tuukka. Yeah. It's like,
the
do you guys
the
realize
reason
he's been excellent for you for
yeah, and he's the reason
career.
Why that they've been so one of the reasons why they've been so good for so long. So yeah.
But I, like that said, I would not be surprised at all if Boston comes back and wins this series. They've actually controlled the flow of play to a pretty ridiculous degree.
Yeah.
They just haven't been rewarded for it.
Yeah. I think I wouldn't be surprised at either outcome, because you're right. The bubble will have to burst eventually for the Islanders, one would think. But the Islanders have done this to teams before. So, like, I really can see it going either way. I would not be able to tell you who wins game six. And that happens tonight on Wednesday when we record this. So it's very possible that the series has been extended on Thursday when you're listening. So who knows? All we could be talking about would be a moot point. But I still thought it was relevant to at least mention that those comments and the way the series has been going, because we didn't get to mention it on the previous episode. But
yeah,
it's, like I said, it's very possible. I could see either outcome, but I'm leaning towards the Islanders closing this out because I know how this team works. I know, like, we've seen this for so long. I know that they can just choke teams to death and they will just not let you play hockey. And I know that a lot of people hate that type of play, but that's just how they're... But it works and it wins. I mean, it has not won them a Stanley Cup final yet, but Barry Trotz has won a Stanley Cup. So he knows that this style of hockey is a bit more proven. At least with the Capitals, you had a lot of offense because you had Alex Ovechkin. Now it's a bit more... You know, it's less offensive, but we've had some really good goals from them. I mean, Matt Barzal has come alive in this series, and that's been really fun to see. So I'm looking forward to whatever Game 6 holds, and it could be, what, since the Lightning advance, it would be the winner of this series against them. So we could either have Bruins, Tampa Bay, or Islanders, Tampa Bay. So.
Yeah. It's a topic for another day, but Washington not reconciling with Barry Trotz and bringing him back sure looks very dumb.
Oh yeah,
3 years later, you know. But we're gonna talk about all sorts of stuff coming up. We got our interview with Eric Engels, or I guess my interview with Eric Engels, because
thank you, Andrew.
Mary couldn't make it, and then we're gonna do our pop culture roulette, and right after a word from our sponsor. Did you know that 85% of people who play daily fantasy sports lose? Is that really surprising? The game's rigged against you. You're playing against thousands of other lineups, not to mention experts who have more tools and more time. You don't stand a chance. Introducing Stat Hero. It's the first ever daily fantasy sportsbook that puts the player in control and winning within reach. Here's how it works. Stat Hero shows you their lineups and dares you to beat them. It's you versus the house in a head-to-head fantasy matchup, not you versus everyone. You know your stakes. Winner take all. You have the advantage. Stat Hero is showing you their lineups ahead of time. No one else does that. You're in total control. Stat Hero is a daily fantasy league the way it was meant to be. One-on-one, not one versus everyone. Play Stat Hero now and change the odds. Go to stathero.com/lockedon, sign up for free, and right now you can get 3 times back on your first play. They're giving you a 300% match. That's unheard of. Go to stathero.com/lockedon. That's stathero.com/lockedon. Have you got a little nest egg from working from home over the last year and a bit? Well, you want to invest. You want to make that money work for you. Decades of data shows that investors that trade individual stocks underperform the market every year. In fact, only 1% of day traders beat the market. The odds are not in your favor if you're doing it alone. Team up with Wealthfront instead. Investing can be complicated, but whether you're a beginner or you've been investing for years, Wealthfront makes it easy. They have the tools for every portfolio. Wealthfront can create a portfolio of globally diversified, low-cost index funds personalized just for you in minutes. No manual trades, no picking stocks, no watching the stock market every day. They automatically handle all of the investing based on preferences that you control. Wealthfront can even help you lower the taxes you pay as you invest. For the average client, their tax loss harvesting can more than cover the low annual 0.25% advisory fee. Best of all, it's automatic. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedon. All you need is $500 to get started. Get your wealth the easy way and let Wealthfront do the work for you. To get your first $5,000 managed for free for life, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL. That's wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL to start growing your savings. Go to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL and get started today. Hi, and welcome back to the Crosscheck NHL show. Unfortunately, Mary couldn't be with us for this interview. She had some stuff to do, but I've got my good friend Eric Engels here with me. Eric, how you doing? Eric from Sportsnet, I should say.
Well, aside from the fact that I'm suffering from terrible allergies at the moment, you'll have to excuse the nasal nature of my voice. Doing great. It's a beautiful day in Montreal, another one. And it's a fun time in this city right now.
Yeah, it's a little bit nicer than yesterday, which was also it was a beautiful day, but 38 degrees with the humidity is a little bit much for this guy, a little bit sweaty, but today seems like it's going to be really, really nice. So I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, Eric covers the Montreal Canadiens. He is essentially the insider for Sportsnet for the Montreal Canadiens. This is about as improbable a run as any that they've had in the last who knows how long now. But at the same time, we've kind of seen this script before, haven't we? The unlikely Montreal Canadiens team that stumbles into the playoffs against a heavily favored first round opponent that everyone assumes is going to pound them into the ground. And they get off to an okay start, but they're behind. And all of a sudden it's game seven and the Montreal Canadiens show up and eliminate the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay. So there's this incredible paradox going on here, because obviously the way the Canadiens went into the playoffs, losing their last five games, losing 14-21, their schedule, the practice situation, everything we talked about with Dominic Ducharme ad nauseum, I think we all know what the situation is there. It was understandable, but also kind of inexcusable. And after the first 10 games where everyone thought this team was really going to be something, it was hard to find any evidence to support that notion. The paradox part of it is that I'm 38 years old, and even at 3 years old, have some memories of the 1986 Stanley Cup, have fond memories of the 1989 final, remember every single detail about 1993. Since then, the Canadians have gone to the conference finals twice. But this year, and what they've shown over the last seven games, is the best hockey that this team has played potentially in my lifetime. I find it to be an amazing paradox between what they showed during the regular season and what the perception of them was versus what they actually are, which really might be the best team that the Canadians have had in my lifetime. And that includes the ones that won the Stanley Cup in 1986 and 1983. These guys are just playing so well as a team. I'm not talking about the individual components, because they have a bunch of different things that are worth talking about, which I'm sure we'll get into, Andrew. But
for sure,
the way they're playing is it's perfect hockey. And I don't think they got the credit for it. Everyone talked about how Toronto crumbled, and yeah, okay, they did. But those last three games, the Canadians were by far the better team. And the Jets, everyone will talk about how, what happened to them? How could they be the guys that swept the Oilers? The Canadians broke them. They broke them physically and psychologically and just destroyed them in that series. And they did it all together. So it is an incredible paradox to me.
It is. And I think when you look at the moves that Mark Bergevin and the management staff made over the summer, I don't want to say you expected this level of success, but you expected the team to be a lot better than it was during the regular season outside of those first 10 or so games. And it just never came together in the way that everyone assumed that it would, even though Tyler Toffoli was money from game one to now, he's been incredible. But everyone that Mark Bergevin acquired seemed to play the exact part that you wanted them to, but the team couldn't figure out who they were, it seemed. And now it seems to have fallen into place. And talk about playing your best hockey at the most important time. But what was the turning point in your estimation, Eric? Was it as simple as I think Brendan Gallagher said that, or maybe it was Philip Deneau, said that that when they had their backs up against the wall, it was like a wake-up call and they all looked to each other and said, we've got to do this now. Is it really that simple?
To a degree, it is. I mean, obviously, it starts there. You have to have a real hard moment of truth with yourself and then as a team with each other. And, when you have the veterans that the Canadians have in their room, obviously, it's not that hard to come by that kind of mentality where people are willing to get in each other's faces and say certain things and do certain things. So it's, I think that's where it starts. I also think that, you have to find that on the ice. They found it in game five for whatever reason. the confidence came directly from how they started that game and got out to a 3-0 lead against Toronto. And it swelled from there, you know, like it's crazy how you can go for so long with your confidence being in the gutter. And then, you know, how long it could actually take to build, but how quickly it happened for this team. That's a strange process to be, not one that I think we'll get to the bottom of just asking questions of the players or whatever it is. I think it really is just watch and learn. And I don't know how it happened this way, but it has. And it's been something.
I mean, kind of like off topic, but on the topic of your job, is it kind of frustrating? I mean, I know having to do everything over Zoom has been frustrating for the last year and a bit now, but is it extra frustrating seeing such a storyline that this team is writing and not being able to get into the room and take players aside and get those one-on-one interviews and kind of be able to weave a better story? Or are you at the point now in your career where like you can kind of get some of that through texts with players and get some of the background information?
Look, I'm doing the best I can. And at the end of the day, during the playoffs, you know, there's a lot of interaction between myself and different people. But during the playoffs, I do try to give everyone their space.
Right.
There is so much that they have to deal with and so much of it revolving around hockey that I don't want to be a burden to anyone. And, but at the same time, yeah, like it is very hard to be doing this job right now with the storyline being as rich as it is. You know, to give you an example of how great it would be to be in the room on a daily basis and how essential that is to the work we do and how much our fans and audience would be served better by that access is like something as mundane and simple as Corey Perry's pregame routine is something that we would be able to get to every single detail of in a conversation with him. At least one of us would crack that nut. But it's impossible through a Zoom setting to start firing away questions on that. We would need everybody to follow up and follow up and follow up until we got to the bottom of it. But like that's just like a one example. Like we're talking about some players' pregame routine. There's so much more that we could uncover being able to talk to these guys on the like. I would love to speak to Ben Chiarot right now about what's going on with him and how he's playing. You know, Joel Edmondson is a tremendous story. In terms of what the perception was when he came here, what the analytics say about him, what he actually does on the ice. There's so many good stories that unfortunately we can't get a really deep run on without being with being limited to one question and one follow-up if on a practice day, you know, on a game day, we get one question to one person. It's we're doing the best we can with what we have. We're not complaining. A lot of people in worse situations than
yes,
we're in.
Of course.
And, you know, I spent 14 years avoiding working for the most part. So it's, I'm not complaining.
Yeah, for sure. It's frustrating, but like you said, hard to really complain when you're doing a job this special. You know, you mentioned earlier about the injuries, and I think there's a lot of people who, like you said, aren't giving the Canadians much credit right now. The Tavares injury, a freak accident that probably changed the course of that series. You know, Scheifele taking himself out of the series with a dirty hit that took out Jake Evans. The Maple Leafs losing Jake Muzzin was a big deal. I think the Jets losing Dylan DeMello is a bigger deal than people wanted to mention. You know, Paul Stastny wasn't 100%. But at the same time, I think everyone's codifying all of the injuries that have happened to the Canadiens opponents. But, you know, Shea Weber has played an unbelievable amount of minutes in these playoffs. He started the playoffs with in a promo image or video from the Canadians with his hand in a cast. And, you know, I think everyone can see that Brendan Gallagher is still not fully healthy. And then, you know, Philippe Deneau was concussed right before the playoffs. Thomas Tatar is not playing partly due to his own lack of intensity, we'll say, but also he was injured at the end of the season as well. I think there's kind of a one-way narrative being built here, and I think we can all agree that the series would be different with the Leafs if Tavares was healthy, but wouldn't it also be different if Brendan Gallagher could shoot the puck?
Yeah. Carey Price is also coming off in
Kentucky,
best hockey of his life. That's playoffs, like, and you do the no matter how good your team is, need a certain amount of things to line up for you to go absolutely all the way. And like, look at Colorado, right? You know, they swept through the first round. Vegas played a 7-game series, just like Winnipeg and Montreal, where they swept through and got swept. And, you know, Colorado's trailing the season, maybe because they got a little bit out of rhythm, even if they won game one by such a lopsided score, you know, they were taken out of the engagement. It's something the Canadians have to pay very close attention to as they move forward here and await their next opponent. But so many things need to go right for you to win. Like, and the GMs of every team acknowledge this every year. Like, the luck factor is there. Look at last season, Dallas and what they did. You know, by the time they got to the finals, they lost Hintz and Garyanov, and you know, like, they lost their entire third line. They lost Paxa. You know, they couldn't do what they needed to do in order to win. It's like if Montreal lost Deneau, I'm not sure where they would be able to get to in the next series. Nobody would have given them a chance anyways against those guys.
Right.
And I don't think many people are giving them a chance. But I will say that if they continue to play the way they're playing, which is a perfect team game, they can beat anyone.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to get to that. But first, I wanted to, before we go to break, I wanted to ask you one more thing. So we mentioned, you know, the injury situation. And I think a lot is being asked of the top four defensemen on the Montreal Canadiens. And I think especially a guy like Ben Chiarot, who started the playoffs really shaky, trying to keep on going for those big physical hits and looked pretty terrible, and then really composed himself around the same time as the Canadiens roster as a whole. And I think in a way is representative of the way they've played. Like, he's really played within himself, played a simple game, and played very, very well down the stretch here. But I think with the way that they've relied on those top four, losing Jeff Petrie in that game four against the Jets, and I think the Jets were kind of out of it, right? The Canadiens had already broke them. But losing Jeff Petrie with the way they relied on that top four, have you seen a team ever play a perfect game like that in a situation where you kind of expect things to not go their way? And Price did spot them two goals. Like, he kind of got caught both times by Logan Stanley, not expecting him to shoot. But like, that was as picture perfect of a hockey game as a team game as I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. They should have won like 8-1. It was a demoralizing thing, but it was almost the culmination of everything the Canadiens had done to that point in the series against the Jets, just cutting off every lane, cutting off every route, physical, hard, constantly in your face. The Jets trying to move through the neutral zone was muddy at best. And, you know, you look at a guy like you, there's images popping to my head as we're talking about this, of like Dubois waiting for the puck in the neutral zone, and the minute he gets it, someone is right on top of him and it's going the other way. Like, they turn the pucks going back towards the Jet zone, it must have been 35 times in the game. Like, it was impossible for them to get anything going. And you got to hand it to Logan Stanley. I thought he played great. You know, wasn't just the goals. I thought he played a great game. But yeah, you know, you talk about Chiarot off the top there and the Canadiens' defense and relying on the top four as much as they have. And I know a lot of people are saying it's taxing and you can't continue to do it, but like, those guys are kind of built for that. And they get into a certain rhythm within the game, and you're going out every second shift, every third shift at most. That rhythm kind of forces you to keep it simple and do those things. And on Chiarot specifically, you know, he is almost the best example of a player that, you know, nowadays, I think it's age old that we always look at players' flaws and we want to take that into strong account in the entire evaluation. And it's so easy to look at what a player doesn't do, but sometimes it's, as you get bogged down in that, it's really hard to appreciate and understand what a player actually does. And Chiarot is almost the perfect example of that, because he is never going to be accused of being the best puck mover on the Canadiens. He's never going to be accused of being the best decision maker on the Canadiens either. But if you can appreciate the value of how intimidating he is as a player, and how much, like, I've spoken to players that play against him that you know, there's it's one thing to say, oh, a player is hard to play against. It's another thing to say that, like, you don't even want to engage with him because he's just scary out there. Like, and he is. And the Canadians haven't had a player like that in I don't know how long. And it seems as though they have at least three of them right now. So it's you got to appreciate what these guys do. Edmondson is also a perfect example. Although I will say about Edmondson that he has never moved the puck as efficiently in his career as he
incredible play. And the fact is, after the first week or so of the season, he has really only had a stretch of maybe four or five games where he struggled. He's been absolute money the whole time. But we're going to talk about more about the general manager's moves and what to expect in the next series for the Montreal Canadiens after we hear a bit from our sponsors here. The world is slowly but surely opening back up, which means road trips are up for grabs. It's time to get out there, visit your family, your friends, and that means you better get your car in tip-top shape. And if you want to keep your car maintenanced and ready to go, you better check out rockauto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com and shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Why would you bother dealing with a storefront that only has a couple of different manufacturers' worth of parts available to you and no ability to price match or compare prices across multiple manufacturers when you can go to RockAuto.com right now, compare hundreds of manufacturers against each other, and get the best prices available. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether you're a daily driver or someone who just goes out on road trips once in a while, they've got everything that you need. With a few easy clicks, it'll be delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts that your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, and we're back with Eric Engels from Sportsnet. He is the Montreal Canadiens reporter and insider, my good friend. Eric, one thing that I'm looking at, and I see a lot on Canadiens Twitter, is people trying to reconcile the clear buy-in from the players after they were up against the wall and the fact that the Canadiens coaching staff held out Cole Caulfield and Jesperi Kotkaniemi to start the playoffs, which were clearly the wrong decisions. They won that first game despite it. And you see the effective strategies now. What do you think of this coaching staff's contributions to this playoff run? Like, do you see just like this is a normal NHL thing, like good and bad decisions are made, or is it really tough to figure out who should get the most credit here?
Well, first of all, I knew that Dominic Ducharme was going to make some very difficult decisions to start the playoffs. Jesperi Kotkaniemi was on a real down on the way in, and so was Romanov and Caulfield to a degree. You know, it wasn't the worst idea to hold him as an ace in the hole. They gave a pretty good and strong justification for why they were doing it and what they were thinking. But my whole mentality on Ducharme was, you make whatever decisions you think give you the best chance to win. No problem with that at all. But you better be willing to adjust immediately. So if you want to depend on Eric Staal over Jesperi Kotkaniemi based on a 20-game sample or whatever it is, if you want to sit Cole Caulfield out because you just want a certain reliability factor and you want the Canadians to play a certain way and you don't want to expose him to be in a situation where he might end up costing you the goal that you need to win if it's a one-goal game, you know, fine. Like, no problem. You just own your decisions, because if it goes wrong, you're gonna take the blame for it. It won't be Marc Bergevin. It won't be this person or that person. It's going to be you. So I'm going to credit the coach because he did at least three things that nobody in their fan base would have approved of. The media was all over him about it. They asked him nonstop about it. And he just said, you know, we feel good with what we're doing. And they won game one. There was no arguments. I think after game one, you know, I think if they had lost, they would have put Caulfield in right away. They put Kotkaniemi in. They lost game two. And then there was no holding back. As for Romanov, you know, I think what happened with Romanov is they didn't have the worst plan with him to start. I know people like really wanted to see him and feel that the same thing would have happened that you saw with Caulfield, that if you just unchain him and you're going to get more benefit than you would downside. And especially looking at the way Nero and Gustafsson played coming into the playoffs, you're saying like, what are you really losing here? But it wasn't so much that Romanov was playing bad down the stretch, and he was playing bad. Like, let's just call a spade here. To use that expression, that's not a good expression. But, like, it wasn't just that he was playing bad. It was the things that he was doing that, you know, he was so hyperactive and so unpredictable that people would say, like, Merrill's making him look bad. But, like, he was also making Merrill look bad because Merrill had no idea what he was doing on the ice and no idea how to rein him in. That wasn't a good pairing, and we should not see that pairing at any other point this year. But, you know, you have to be objective, because I think Romanov is a great player, and I think he's on his way to being a stud defenseman. But that certain unpredictability and hyperactivity can really be your worst enemy when you're playing on third pair and you're going up against guys that play a simple north-south game and jam pucks and get pucks behind you. A lot, like if you watch Romanov play, there was a lot of reversing in his game, a lot of reversing in his own zone, a lot of freezing out the forwards, trying to look for the perfect play instead of the simple direct, even at all costs, sometimes banging off the glass and off the boards, which no one likes to see, but it sometimes it's a necessity. So I think what happened with him is that as you get to like game three, game four, game five, even if you're thinking about putting him in, because of those factors and why you were keeping him out, it almost became too late to turn to that card. Now, they got into a situation where they were forced to do it in game four against the Jets, and they were in a position where they could roll him out in a responsible way, and then he would heed the message and do things kind of in a way. You know, he had enough sample time watching to figure out where he was going to go with it. So, anyways, roundabout here, going through the individual decisions, I think the coaching staff deserves a ton of credit. I think the most credit probably goes to the group, though, because, you know, Ducharme is very fortunate to have the room that he has. You know, like this room is filled with champions and future Hall of Famers. And like, it's a coach's dream, especially as an interim rookie head coach, to have those guys to lean on. And so long as they buy what he's doing, they sell it. And that's huge.
Yeah, for sure. You know, speaking of embattled Canadians, people employees will say, I think a lot of people before these playoffs, and especially when the Canadians were down 3-1, were out for Bergevin's neck, right? And that's been the case whenever the Canadians have struggled almost his entire tenure, as it is for every Canadian's general manager and coach. Have these playoffs earned Bergevin an extension?
I think Bergevin had an extension in hand before these playoffs started. I think that opportunity has been in his hands for a while now. And I know that some talks were certainly had, and Elliot Friedman reported as much. You know, I have an interesting thought on Bergevin. You know, the big question for me as they got the 3-1 down to Toronto was, is he going to want to? You know, he's got 1 year left on his deal. I'm sure he's not going to leave that. But would he want to continue beyond that? Because it's aged him, and it's hurt him at times. And I remember we had a conversation after, you know, the worst section of his tenure as GM, where I said, you know, how has this affected you personally? And he said, you know, I've closed myself off at times, even to people, fans, people that come up to me. And, you know, I'm always nice, but to a certain degree, I find myself, you know, being a bit more reclusive. And, you know, that when someone as outgoing and known for a sense of humor says something like that, you should pay attention to it. I think is the pressure of this job is unbelievable. And I don't know how he handles it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But I want to say this.
Okay? You don't see him joke around very much anymore.
No, he does, you know, to the people who know him well, but publicly and outgoingly, you know, he's very different than the guy who first started here in 2012. And if you go back and watch his first press conference, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I want to say this about Bergeron. Find me a Canadiens fan who didn't like the work he did in the offseason.
Yeah.
Like, was there anyone who was like, ah, I don't like these moves. This doesn't make sense. You know, not only that, I would take it a step further to suggest that 90% of the fan base probably would have said, not only has he done great, great work here, like name a GM that's done better work with his team in the offseason. You know, he addressed virtually every key hole that the Canadiens had. And he said as much. And I think everybody believed that. And as they got off to the 10-game start that they got off to, they showed the potential of what they could be. And, you know, I think we all drank that Kool-Aid. I certainly did. And I put out a tweet that people have stuffed in my face ever since it came out saying, you know, like, but I want to explain that tweet because what I had tweeted was, here's an off day thought. It was like literally right after the 10-game streak. And I said, how many things would have to go incredibly wrong for Bergevin not to unanimously be considered the GM of the year or Jim Gregory Award? Okay. And I was saying it in a way like, think about how much would have to go wrong. Like the team would have to go into the gutter. Claude Julien would have to get fired. They would have to lose out and miss the playoffs. Like they were, does everyone forget that they were a 24th place team last year?
Yeah.
You know, at the beginning of the year through those 10 games, they looked like one of the five best teams in the league without question, potentially the best one. And that was what I was getting to. I wasn't suggesting that like he's the best GM and he's done, you know, everything right. I was saying like, think about how many things would actually have to go wrong for him to take himself out of that conversation completely. Like, and then all of a sudden, virtually everything, you know, like,
yeah, they almost managed that.
But to the people that have been throwing that tweet in my face, specifically when Toronto went up 3-1 in that series, they may have wanted to wait before spiking the football. That's yes. That's all I could say, because I would imagine even now that it has been secured that he will be a candidate for the Jim Gregory Award. I believe he will be one of the three people named. And provided the Canadiens don't bow out meekly over the next series, I think, would he be the front runner to win it? I think there's a very strong chance he would win that award. So I don't know of many GM of the year candidates that, you know, get fired at the end of the year. So if you're sitting out there crossing your fingers, hoping that Mark Bergevin will be back with the Canadiens, spoiler alert, he will be.
Yeah. And I think it was such a weird year because even when things were going wrong, everything that Mark Bergevin actually did in the off season continued to be essentially gold. You know, Jake Allen was a brilliant decision. Joel Edmondson turned out really, really well, paired really, really well with Jeff Petrie specifically, Tyler Toffoli, you know, their best player in the regular season. It was really everything else that went sideways. You know, like Josh Anderson, I still think that's a pretty risky contract in terms of term, but he was great for most of the regular season. Like it's such a weird team in that respect. And it's kind of nice to see them pull it all together. Before I let you go, Eric, because I know you're very busy, who do the Canadiens match up better against, Colorado or Vegas?
I don't really have the answer. You know, I'm kind of waffling between both here, and neither of them are particularly good matchup because they're the best teams in the league. But, you know, I look at Colorado. They're a different team with Kadri there. The yep. depth that they have up front is much more dangerous when he is there. If he's not there, you know, the Canadiens can kind of rely on a similar recipe than they have than they have against the Jets and Toronto in terms of shutting down the top line and trying to beat the other three with the depth that you have and just putting up a defensive wall. Colorado's defense, the mobility of it is terrifying. You know, like that's something where you can put the puck behind them a lot and try to grind them and cycle them, but if they retrieve it quickly and move it quickly, it's a much harder game to play. So your neutral zone game has to be perfect. I think Vegas, you know, I'm pulling it less tangibles in terms of how the Canadians match up to them, more so that I look back over the last couple of years and feel like the Canadians, for whatever reason, really got enough to play against that team and really enjoyed the style. And there's much more similarities between Montreal and Vegas than people would even care to admit in terms of the way they play and the depth that they have and the kind of guys that are in both teams and the physical nature of the series. Colorado, I don't know. Like, I think it could be, you know, both teams are going to present just a remarkable challenge for the Canadians. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're going to really find out that much more about this coaching staff as we go along here. I think they've done a great job so far. They have to do a masterful job to give the Canadians a chance. I think the dynamic changes against both these teams, no matter what. You know, you're going to have to halak it for a couple of these games, no matter what. You can play as well as you played all the way through, but at some point or another, one of these two teams is going to dominate or for large stretches, and Carey Price is just going to have to stand on his head. And man, you know, no issue thinking that he'll be able to do that. He's been unbelievable in these playoffs. And I don't know. I just can't wait to watch it. Like, I think it's going to be incredible. There's great storylines, no matter who the Canadians face. I'm not making a prediction on the series one way or another, because even if I wouldn't take my life savings and bet them on the Canadians, I would not bet against them right now. So and that's all we could have hoped for right now, like ahead of like a series in terms of storylines and what we're going to be talking about. I think it's so exciting, you know, to have that happening. And the city is so alive and this is so needed. Like these last 15 months have just been torturous, and to have this all happening and coinciding with, you know, COVID protocols going down and vaccinations happening and the sun shining and, oh, it's been a long time, man. It's been a long time. And it's been a long time in terms of the Canadians being in the playoffs and being in Montreal for them. So this is quite an incredible thing.
Yeah, there is a catharsis in the city right now that hasn't been there in a very long time. And obviously people aren't satisfied. They want more because this is the Montreal Canadiens after all. And hopefully they at least make the next series competitive, which I think we both think they will. Eric, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it, and have a great rest of your day.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and apologies for my allergic reactions. So
happens
bad
to the best of us, man.
Yeah, we're two guys having allergy attacks, I think, talking to each other right now. It's pretty bad.
Absolutely. All right, have a good one, man.
Be well, Andrew.
Looking for a tasty snack? Check out the best tasting protein bar on the market, Built Bar. Soft and easy to chew, covered in chocolate, Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, plus the occasional limited time flavor. When you talk about Built Bar, you're going to get some listeners. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out. There's coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. There's something for everyone. I really enjoy the mint brownie. I'm a sucker for mint and chocolate together. They're just amazing. Whereas my wife, she'll choke if she has mint anywhere near. She hates it. She doesn't even like brushing her teeth with mint toothpaste. It's just not her thing. So she's all about the double chocolate stuff. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, they're healthy too. The flavors have between 17 and 18 grams of protein, only between 130 and 180 calories, and only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 net grams of carbs. 9 amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. Order today, get that raspberry or mint brownie or double chocolate, whatever you prefer. You can also try a mixed box if you're adventurous and don't know which ones you want. Get two of each of the 9 flavors in a mixed box. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Oh, Mary, I had a lot of fun interviewing Eric Engels earlier today. I was sad that you couldn't make it, but everyone wants to meet the tiny humans. And when you got family coming in from far away and the way the last, 15 or so months have been, I think everyone needs to take advantage of every moment they can to see their family and their friends. And it's just so important. But
It is. And I'm very lucky to be very close with my family. So that also plays a part in it, too. And it was really nice. It was funny, though. I was listening to you record the ad reads, and your wife doesn't like mint. She's very much like my sister. My sister also does not like mint, hates it. She thinks she's allergic to it, but I think that it's just her saying that she just doesn't like. I think it's just her excuse for not liking it, but it's very possible. It's just really funny that there's also somebody that I know now that has the same thing as my sister.
She hates mint, can't stand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sister uses kids' toothpaste.
I think my wife uses just a very minuscule amount of toothpaste and then just makes sure she does a good brushing. I think mint just makes her gag. She hates it. And like when we were younger, I used to like chew mint gum, and if she'd like be unsuspecting and go in for a kiss or whatever, she'd be like, ah, what the hell? But yeah, not her favorite.
I love mint personally, so I'm very excited for when we get our Built Bars. Yeah, I will be able to try this. I'm
a huge mint fan. So the most important thing to talk about in our pop culture roulette has nothing to do with pop culture. It's that when this episode publishes, Mary, it's going to be your birthday.
Yeah, it's my birthday, on Thursday as you're listening to this. Thank you. I'll be 28. So, late 20s. You know how it is.
I do. It was a while ago.
It doesn't feel any different. No. It is. This time of year is always very busy for me between like my birthday and I'll be going on vacation in a few weeks. And that always happens around the same time each year. And, there's just a lot of stuff happening in my life, especially because now things are opening up. I'll be able to get to see my family, going out more. So it's just usually this time is very busy for me. But thank you. I'm going to have a low key dinner. My parents are making me some filet mignon parmesan, I think is what it is. It's nice. Just, steak covered in like a parmesan cheese. It's very good. So we're just going to have a low key dinner. That's kind of all we're doing. I'll probably have like some sort of family gathering when we're on vacation together, because since my cousin is in with her twins and her husband, we're having a birthday party for them, for the twins, whose birthday is in July, so it's an 11th month party, but that'll be this weekend. So I'll get to see my family, but I won't be celebrating my birthday until probably a few weeks from now, which is fine because it is very busy. It's a very busy time for all of us. But outside of my birthday, another busy thing for me is it's E3 week, and E3 is, Christmas for video game people. It's a bunch of trailers, bunch of announcements, exciting things ahead. I'm very much looking forward to watching things from Nintendo and even Xbox, even though I don't own one, because I want to see what they have up their sleeves. And I'm looking forward to just a bunch of video game reveals and trailers and stuff like that. So hopefully maybe next week I'll have stuff to talk about, depending on when we record. But I am looking forward to everything that E3 week has to offer, because that is always a very busy time for me because I love video games and video game news. So I'm looking forward to what gets announced and what else we see, because we might see Breath of the Wild 2, we might see a few like Square Enix properties, like the new Final Fantasy game. There's just a lot to look forward to, and I'm very excited for it.
E3 was canceled last year, right, due to COVID?
It was canceled, and then they held some like a virtual, different companies held virtual things, like Sony held like their own big virtual conference,
right, just like Disney's and Nintendo thing was held something last year, and then they just like shot it out on Twitter.
Yeah, and this year it's all digital, but they're having like an E3 event. So it is like under the banner of E3 this year. But yeah, Sony won't be there, but they usually do their own. Like they've like moved away from doing E3. That's kind of how it's going.
Which kind of sucks, because it's like cool to have like the big event with all the companies. I know everyone wants to do their own thing, but
it does suck, but I get why, because like they don't want to be bogged down in all the announcements from other companies. They want their own games to shine. But I love video game news regardless of when we get it, so I'm This is E3 is something I look forward to every year because it falls right around my birthday. Usually the Tony Awards happen around this time too, but the Tony Awards won't happen until September this year, which, you know, because musical theater has not come back yet, which is a disappointment. I love musical theater. So usually, like I said, my birthday is usually very busy time because also usually the Stanley Cup final happens around this time of year too. So, like I said, very busy stuff. A lot of things I love always, you know, coincide around this time. But I'm very much excited for whatever, you know, video games have in store. And I guess we should also mention that Loki has come out too on Disney+.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet because I've just been so busy.
Yeah, I haven't
today.
Had it.
I'm so excited though.
Yeah. Yes, I don't know when I'm going to be able to watch it because, you know, my schedule, as I have said, very busy, but I will hopefully find time within the next couple of days or even over the weekend to watch it because I'm looking forward to that too and really excited to see what that's about. It seems like it's in a similar vein to WandaVision where it's more a bit of an out there concept. Yeah. Not that Falcon and the Winter Soldier was bad by any means, but it was more of like a TV drama, like a procedural
show. Yeah, buddy
comedy. In a sense.
Or not buddy comedy,
yeah,
but like
yeah,
buddy
yeah.
drama.
And that was fun. That was fun, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing what Marvel has in terms of the weirdness.
Yeah, I think
factor.
Anytime that they push the boundaries, it's good, right? And the early reviews for Loki are pretty darn positive, so I'm very excited. Yeah. Tom Hiddleston is great in everything. He is so good.
And these miniseries are always super fun. I think that they've figured out a format that works for them, and it gets like characters like that more time to shine that don't always get time to shine in the movies and stuff. So, like I said, very much looking forward to it. My sister has already watched. Is it the first two episodes that are out already?
I think it's just one, but if it's two, that's even more
exciting.
It's
only one? Okay. My sister's already watched it, and I told her not to tell me anything. So, hopefully by the next time we talk, I will be able to give, or I guess both of us will be able to give our opinions so far on what we think, because we are both Marvel fans, and it seems like something we are both going to watch.
Absolutely. So, before we let you go, I have one Canadian word for you. It's more of a regional word. Bunny hug.
Okay.
This is from where I grew up in Saskatchewan.
This isn't great audio content, me just thinking. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll edit these pauses out for you guys so it's not as awkward. Is it something related to like the side of a road? The side of a road?
No, it is a hoodie.
Okay. Ah, that makes sense. That's cute. Yeah. I like that. A hoodie.
Bunny hug. Aww. That's what we always called it in Saskatchewan.
That's adorable. Sadly, it's not bunny hug season in Pennsylvania. It
the
is
word
hot.
Is kind of dying out. It's going the way of the dodo. So I'm trying to keep it alive.
All right. I'll try and keep it alive here, but I don't know if it'll take
off. No, probably not.
I hate to say it. I hate to say
hoodie
it.
Hoodie is just so ubiquitous, right?
Yeah,
all we have today for you on the Crosscheck NHL show. We hope you really enjoyed it. I think it was a great interview with Eric Engels, despite him suffering from an allergy attack similar to me the last few weeks. And, you know, we can't wait to talk to you again next week when we'll be talking about probably previewing the third round of the NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs. But before we let you go, we've got to tell you about the Locked On Today podcast. Get more of the sports news that you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. In under 20 minutes, host Peter Bukowski will fill you in on the latest news from every major sport. Rapid fire. Check out the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. See you on Tuesday.